Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host with the most, Nikki Carulla. We have in the studio virtually Miss Elena Bernardio. Elena, can you hear me? I think your microphone, it says your microphone is on. All right. I think maybe you're on now. Can you hear me? Oh, I can't hear you now all of a sudden. Did you switch anything? Click on the join audio button if you haven't already in the lower left corner. And then I think we'll be good. But I just had you, and then I just lost you. Say something just so I can hear you. Yeah, I can't hear you now. It says, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Okay, you can hear me. I can't hear you. Your microphone's super low. So maybe...
Can you hear me now?
Oh, I can hear you now. That's perfect.
Can you hear me now?
I sure can. Okay. All right. So, Elena, you're a singer-songwriter, and you've been making musicals and collaborating and putting out your own records and your own music. So tell me where you started and how you kind of started getting into music. How old were you when you first knew you wanted to be a singer?
I would definitely say, like, well, my mom is a piano player, but by trade, she's a scientist, but she played piano at home when I was a kid. And when I was 6 years old, Phantom was touring, and I saw it, right? And it was like I was hooked. And then she got the songbook, and so she would be playing accompanying me, and I didn't realize that was at the time, like having a mom playing Andrew Lloyd Webber with you as a kid. But then I would sing Phantom of the Opera for all the talent shows, and sometimes she would play with me. And
what was your go-to song?
Just kind of went on from there, and then Angel of Music. And now looking back on it, I think that's just because that was like the easiest one for her to teach me.
I actually saw Phantom with Michael Crawford. Do you remember Michael Crawford? He was like the Phantom.
Well, he was the one who was on the recording, the one that I listened to when I was a kid. So
he was the bomb. So you learned from one of the greats.
I did, yeah.
So what other musicals did you get into besides Phantom?
Yeah, and then Rent in high school. And then I feel like I didn't start getting really nerdy into musical theater until I came out to LA and then started working in musical theater, because I went to school for opera.
And where did you go to school?
I went to Michigan State.
All right. That's the home of Magic Johnson.
Yeah, and I studied voice.
So we share that in common. I actually studied classical voice at USC, and I was doing opera.
I know, I saw that in your bio, and I was like, oh my gosh, he's going to get me.
No. So did you minor in musical theater at Michigan State as well, or did you just get more into it when you came into LA?
No, I got my degree in music education.
Oh, wow. So you completely bypassed classical voice, or did you take training and lessons at school?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I trained, like, my instrument was voice, but I was a music ed major.
Oh, okay.
Which it's interesting because I started my own theater here and then I did my show. And with both of them, I've done music direction. So I think my path has been more like, because as a musician, as a music educator, I've gone towards like, let's do a show and I'm going to music direct. Like, it's been kind of that route a little bit, as opposed to like, I'm an actor, I'm going to do a show and sing. Like, I'm on definitely, like, I love hanging with musicians, the homie hang and stuff.
It's a different thing. It's a different thing altogether. That's what actually, you know, made me kind of more drawn to that too. Because I would hang out with classical voice singers, and it was cool, but the parties weren't as fun and the hangs weren't as cool. So I definitely started hanging out with more jazz musicians and soul and funk musicians, and it just kind of grew into that. So obviously you share that too.
Yeah. I feel you, but I will say, once we're not in quarantine, I do host like the best with a bunch and jazz people.
Oh, so, that's awesome.
I'm trying to like mesh the two worlds.
Well, you know what? That's good. You're bringing LA all together. So tell me, you also did some original music. Tell me what that was like.
Yeah, so I recorded like an indie pop record, and it was just one of those things. I think it's just one of those things you do in your early 20s. I don't know. I just songs. And I mean, it was a big project. I did it in the Valley with Drew Alsbrook with the People's Music Studio. Under his label, Community, still living on. I just, I'm in the process of signing a publishing deal with the record. So it's happening also musical, which is cool.
Well, it's kind of cool. You're wearing many hats. And tell me, like, do you ever like fall in and out of love with each position as far as like what you're doing in music, or do you kind of like having a whole bunch of different hats? Because I'm like that too. So I'm curious.
That's such a good question. Never gotten asked that question, and I love that. I think that my heart lies in like jazz and music. Like, if I could take like Joni Mitchell and like Ella Fitzgerald and like Stephen Sondheim and like mesh them all together, that would be my heart.
That'd
like,
be an interesting combination for sure.
I think that's my. So I think the music is what I love. And then in order for me to express my love of the music and share it with others, it comes in like recording a record with a bunch of homies, or like putting on a show, or what was the other thing that I do? Putting on a show or writing a musical. Yep, that stuff.
So let's talk about a little bit about the musical. You have a musical that you collaborated with called Swiped the Musical. Tell me how that came about and what all went into just making that happen.
Ah, oh my gosh. Okay. So I'm like, how much time do we have?
We have tons of time, so go for it.
I definitely did like the dating app thing like we all have, right? And I had this one situation that was like he like cut things off with me in a text message and it was like after things had gotten more serious, but we had like for things to get more connecting, I guess is what I'm saying. And then it was like he just like cut it off in a text message. And it's not like I like was upset, but I, and with the way I thought about it was like, I feel like because we just meet on a dating app and there's no history and there's no bonding us or whatever, like people kind of treat like humanly matter.
Right.
So that was kind of like the premise for the show was like, let's bring to light some of these issues that I see with. So that was how I wrote it. So I thought to write it in November of 2018. I started writing it the first week of January in 2019, and then June 2019. So wow. It was like 10 original songs. Yeah, but it was one of those things where it was like, I was like hitting the pavement like every single night up till like 1:30 a.m.
But busy is always good. But I mean, that's a lot of work.
It's a lot. And I think that it's just one of those things, like, I mean, I'm looking more and more into, like, obviously as creatives, we have our style. So like how to manage reasonable and not kill myself, because I'll be honest with you, like, I don't know if I could, I mean, if the paycheck was big enough, maybe, but like 6 months and kill myself. It happened. And we did it.
That's crazy. And you just did, how many shows did you do? You did like a run of like maybe 6 or 7, right?
No, weekly.
So tell me, you kind of cut in and out.
No worries. We did 10 shows.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And do you want to take it on tour, or do you want to just do another run soon and kind of build more of a buzz?
Yeah, good question. I think that I don't know what's going to happen, like when we're going to be able to perform live. I know that's all up in the air for all of us. I want to go to New York City. I've been spending a lot of time in quarantine, like Instagram messaging friends in New York. Hey, that was a really great solo on your saxophone. Like building relationships in New York. It hasn't been intentional, but you know, it's like everybody's at home, like playing music, so we can connect with each other and give each other for our music. But I do want to tour it.
And did you use for the story, did you use exact characters, or were they, you know, kind of recreations of situations?
Good question. I love these questions. To character. No, based on real and different scenario, kind of like how I meet them. But like the concept is based on real people. And one person, like, it was Oculus. It was like one of those numbers in like a musical where it's like, this would probably never happen in real life.
You have to have some part of the fairy tale in there, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because it is a fairy tale for sure.
And are you're the main character, I assume. And was it like, how many people were in the cast and how many people were in the band? How many people took on the whole production?
Right. It's a one woman show. So I played all the characters.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So there were like 7 different characters. And we had and yeah, it was just me and the piano player. He's a composer, which is really awesome for me being a classical singer to have somebody that understands the classical voice and understands like classical music writing with me. I think I really like that a lot. So he wrote the music and then accompanied for most of the shows. So
what was the biggest obstacle that you went just in the creating or just the promoting or the just the actual performance? What was the biggest obstacle that you had in each kind of setting?
Filling the house for 10 shows.
Especially in a big city, because in LA, it's like there's so much stuff going on all the time that that's always the biggest.
So much going on. Yeah. And you're kind of relying on your social media presence and like how engaging you are with your posts to entice people to come. You have time. Sometimes it's on your side to people is really what has people come to your shows, but you only have so much time to send out personal invites. And then it's a ratio thing. It ends up being like every 3 invites, there's shows, then thinking about filling, you know, however, you know, that in terms of like the whole run of a show, that means you have to invite 3,000 people in it. And the end, it's like, ah!
Well, and it's also, you know, the funny thing is I feel like everybody before the whole COVID-19 thing and the quarantining life began, they kind of took art a little bit for granted. But now that everybody's quarantined, they are completely reliant on art to entertain. And so I think a lot of people, once this thing ends, they're going to kind of see and value art in a much different way. So I'm hoping people come out, you know, for the next run. 100%
agree with you. And I agree with you. I think the same thing. I even went online last night. I was at home at 9 o'clock, and I scrolled through Facebook, and I'm like, who of my friends is playing live right now? Like, I want to see somebody. So, because I was like hungering for like a real musician playing something.
Yeah, you know, I just did a performance for, it was like a bunch of venues that did an online virtual performance. And after I finished, it was really cool because people were like chiming in and you know, tipping and doing all that. But I finished and I was thinking, I hope this is not the future of performing, because everything with performing is about creating a vibe with the audience in front of you and creating like kind of a moment where, you know, you're engaging with other people and bringing a world into their light and bringing, you know, their world into your light. And it's really different when it's virtually done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. I don't think it's going to be the future of live performance.
We hope not. But speaking of live performance, what are you going to play for us first?
Okay, so the first song I'm going to sing is the opening number of the show. And this number is called By When. And it kind of talks about the way she is, the way that she is. So it sets us all up.
All right, let's hear it.
Are we ready?
We're ready. Let's do it.
A suburb of Chicago, I'm smart to the bone from the very start, driven wise and proud. I love Barbies, cats, koalas, and anything. I'm 90 from preschool to the park in my stylish Jeep. I am the cul-de-sac queen. And second place in the voting bee. In second, I am class treasurer, determined to fix the economy. Lisa is my favorite in her buddy journal. I write all my goals. I have a pencil case of scratch and sniff stickers. I'm on my way to a preschool success. By when I'll win a spot. By when I'll have my first birthday sleepover. By when I'll debut. By when tomorrow, next week, 1 year. And it's point. I play the nurse in the High School Musical. She is kind. Every time I mutter the line, you have acute appendicitis and your spleen is pretty hot too. I'm the one to organize ditch day. That weekend is the SAT. I prank swimmingly for 1300. Now it's off to college at Central Michigan University. Tantalabi is my release. I jot down my brand new milestones in my navy blue moleskin notebook. I can cry. Boy, to run this millennial thing. By when I will finish with grad school. By when I will lease my first apartment. By when I will cash my tomorrow. 6 months. tulips. I'm leaving downtown in my dream. Weekends at IKEA. Sundays are for the girls. My job is big, great. I have the perfect fit.
Why don't you bring your boyfriend to the company mixer?
My boyfriend, I was a little girl. My daddy, he said to me, your mother, I love her. She is so dear to me, each other. One thing I know is true. She is the most beautiful woman I ever knew. But mommy, she didn't feel way. Mom had other plans, like dancing till dawn with strangers and traveling to far off lands. So what did a moment? What did I make sure that I did? But from then on, I would make sure that whatever my path, I control the path, whatever situation I put myself in, I could control the outcome. I'm here now. I'm really here now, and maybe it's time. Oh, I don't want time that I, you know, found somebody to. By when I will start my next juice cleanse. By when I will finish my taxes. By when I will meet my first boyfriend. By when.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. I definitely hear the Sondheim influence for sure. It sounds like something out of the Into the Woods musical.
I love Sondheim so much.
He's a singer.
Into the Woods is my favorite singer, show. He's
a musical composer for sure.
Oh, I hear you say that. I feel that way too. I'm like, he knows voices.
You were going to say your favorite song on musical, and I bet it's Sweeney Todd.
No, it's Into the Woods, like you said.
Oh, okay. All right. That's a good one. It's a very, very good one. It's one of the classics. Now, you know, there are a lot of musicals like Hamilton. Have you seen Hamilton?
I mean, no, but I've listened so much, and so many of my online are inspired by Lin-Manuel Miranda. He inspires me all the time.
You know, it's funny. It's like my favorite musical, I think, of all time is still Miss Saigon. It's still one of my favorites. I love the songs. I performed a bunch of
beautiful
them.
Beautiful score, right?
It's so good. So when I saw Hamilton, one of the things I was kind of bummed about was some of the music to me was just okay, but I love the story and the history lesson it gives you and that portrait of somebody that's kind of not really well known. That's the best part of Hamilton. But I still, like, when I go and see other musicals, the classics especially, there's so much arrangement and there's so much musicality that I feel like is it's so important to carry a story just as much as a story, you know?
Yeah. I know those.
You're doing that with your song.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, there's a lot of intention that went into it. So, yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
So how did you know when the musical was done that it was ready to rock? Like, because there had to have been rewrites, I'm sure, with the story. There had to have been rewrites with the songs. How did you know when a song or parts of the scenes or the story was finished?
You kind of the work up until you the last minute, and then you put it on, and then you're doing rewrites and changing things as you go along.
Wow. So you were changing things as you were doing each performance?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, not big things, but like, you know, there were some songs where it was like, wow, it seems like the audience is really dead during this section. And I don't want to cut the bridge. And then everybody would be like, Elena, you need to cut the bridge. And I'm like, ugh. Like that kind of stuff. You know, it's like, because you read it in front of a live audience and you don't know how certain things are going to land. It's like with the. So.
It's like you hear it from their perspective, even as you're doing it.
Staring out to an audience and like there's deadpan faces in front of you. You're like, huh, maybe I should change this part.
You know what, though? It's like that's part of the art. It's like sometimes things are just going to be above people's heads because, you know, I feel like artists are always pushing the boundaries. And I think great art is always going to be a couple levels above most people's threshold just because they're expecting it to be a hit right away. And that doesn't always happen. Like some of the best music wasn't a hit right away. It was like a slow burn that eventually became a cult classic or a monster hit, you know?
Yeah. I think it's so nice to talk to a fellow musician like yourself because I just so agree with what you're saying. And I know probably some of our mutual friends, we would both agree that like, yeah, they're pushing the boundaries in the genre that they're making up. You know, I know people, you made up a genre with your career, you know, and I feel like there's an element of me doing that too. It's like musical theater, pop, opera, jazz kind of thing, that, you know, but well,
the biggest thing I've learned, it's like, you know, when you're in your 20s, like people are always telling you how you should change your art. It's just a natural impulse of anybody that you share your art with. And it's like, I learned
you should be a certain way. Yeah.
And so I would kind of like start to bend a little bit. And then I started noticing the more I would bend the way I think the art would be, the less I'd like it. And if I don't like what I'm doing, then how can I ever expect anybody else to like it? So I slowly started bending it back.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, it's almost like, you know, something I heard that Michael Jackson used to do, like, you know, these musicians, he'd hire the best musicians and he would sing them a part and they would play like a variation of the part and he would sing them the same part for about 30 minutes until they played the exact thing that he was singing because he knew exactly what it was going to be. And those are the parts that made the, you know, biggest selling record of all time. So sometimes there is going to be an interpretation that people aren't going to get right away, or they're going to want to change because they want to put their own imprint or they want their own opinion to kind of shape whatever it is. But really, I feel like the truest artists, you know, and Banksy, you know, I always come back to him for just art because he makes it however he wants. And no matter how it's, you know, ingested, it doesn't matter. He even will make fun of how it's, you know, taken in. So it's like, I feel like, make your art because you're doing good things already. And it's got a foundation of musicality and it's got a storyline. Like all the things you were doing were so funny. Like, you know, the things, the story lyrics in the song, they're so current and they're so happening. And maybe not everybody will get them, but it's like if people really are smart, don't dumb it down. Like make it smart because they'll catch up to what you're doing. That's my fortune.
No, and I think, man, I love to hear you say that too, because I think, yeah, no, I love it so much. You know, those of us who do put the effort into studying the craft, the classical music, there's a certain level of like that, right? And then it like, it comes out in the music and it's like, yeah, I had to come to that conclusion too, where I was like, I'm not going to dumb down my musicality or my music to feel that somebody thinks that I need to be. So I agree with you.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's like one thing I've learned about, yeah, fans and fan bases, you attract what you want to attract. And if you attract those people, they'll find you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. What are you going to play for us next? I know you have a couple other songs you want to play for us.
Okay. So the next song, I think you'll really, you found the other one funny, called I Swipe. And it's the song when she first opens up her cell phone and she says, I'm going to find a boyfriend on this app. Okay. With only a photo to judge, my eye will categorize and decide who I am. There are so many to choose from, but only a few. Some will end up getting a date. They come in all sizes, masterfully hiding their demons, with manicured faces of all different races, and attempt perfectly decent, and I swipe and I swipe left, right. If this thumb is the only way I have to find him, then leave me. They are video gamers and hunters, bad boomed preps, who are Facebook employees, artistic directors, filmmakers, and clothing brand reps. Thoughtful and their profile lines of trades with pictures of families, hobbies, and exes. They're casting, and I am the bait. And I swipe and swipe and I swipe left, right, and I do some thumbing. I'll ignore all the numbing I experience emotionally.
Yeah.
Try my best to make her grandfather proud of me. But I can't guarantee it. Maybe I'll choose one who has a temper like mother, or one who is as critical and judgmental as father, and inevitably end up just as unhappy as they turned out to be. Awkward selfie upon selfie upon selfie. I scroll while I'm in I swipe and I swipe and I swipe left and left right as this thumb keeps on thumbing and thumbing and thumbing as this thumb keeps on thumbing. I know he'll be coming as this thumb keeps on thumbing. I'll ignore all the numbing I experience emotionally.
Yeah, very nice. You must be a coloratura soprano, I assume.
I must be coloratura. Yeah.
I can hear all the runs.
Thank you. I practice a lot.
So speaking of practicing, what are all the instruments that you play? Because I noticed that you play piano, you play ukulele. Tell me how you kind of gravitated towards playing all these instruments.
That's a really good question. I don't really know. I think it's one of those things, songs, you're just kind of like, hey, maybe I should find a way to play this on guitar. Like, I want to play this. I started with piano because my mom played when I was like seven, when I was in middle school. and then ukulele I picked up when I was in my 20s. I think at any of them, like I am, or, you know, you one would consider at my voice. So my the thing I put the most intention into is my voice, but I love instruments. And I even have like a little, so I think, I guess what I would say is, this is interesting, because this is another thing to our point about the different. I really like using my physical body to play music in a way that is like for instruments, as opposed to like a lot of musical theater performers. It's not that I don't love to dance. I love to dance. But like, I'm obsessed with playing instruments. So that's, I think, probably why I went the route of like, yeah, more music director, composer.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's rare too, because a lot of singers, they don't have the patience to learn instruments. So it puts you in another level. It also trains your ear to be a little bit better, because I think the more instruments you learn and kind of gravitate towards, then the more you're hearing music in different timbres, in different genres, in different instrumentation, different octaves, and it's just making your ear better than just, you know, I noticed a huge difference when I started playing instruments along with singing, because it definitely was a fork in the road from singers.
You have to tune to the instrument.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Do you write on piano, ukulele, all of them, or do you kind of write on piano and then transfer it to ukulele or other instruments?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, the process, I think, is different based on what the song calls for. There was one thing I wanted to go back to, though. I just want to talk about that process. I want to talk about something you said, because it trains your ear, and there's something in me, and I don't know if this way with other people, but I really mad at myself when I don't sound in tune. So I think that also had me like start to play more instruments. Because I can't, unless I work on it, I'm not going to produce a C4 like directly and perfectly in tune. Do you get what I'm saying?
Totally, completely. And I also feel like you can tell the difference between an out of tune note and intonation, because there's no instrument that's intonated completely perfectly. But it's like when you have the ear to know the difference, that's everything. Because sometimes things can be just completely right on, and it may not sound like it's completely right on, but that little difference, it's all in intonation. Most people don't hear intonation, and I think that's like the difference of playing an instrument versus not playing an instrument, because you'll hear it in your voice.
Oh my gosh, I love that. You and I could do a podcast about just that. Yes.
No, and it's crazy. Like, people will listen to singers and, you know, they'll say, oh, this singer's so great. And I'll hear it, and it won't be a great vocal to me. It won't be a great, you know, even an instrumentalist, because of certain things that you know as a trained musician, that if it doesn't sound like it's technically correct or soulfully correct, that's another, you know, issue, then it may not sound
the same.
That's
a whole other thing, yeah.
Yeah, because our ears are trained. And it's almost like, you know, I always think about people with perfect pitch. I don't have perfect pitch, but, you know, when they hear it, I can't even imagine how much they cringe. You know what I mean? With regular instruments.
Yeah, my feelings about it is already bad enough. You can't even imagine what it's like when you have perfect pitch. Yeah. Can I, because I think this is interesting, because it ends up being a little genre specific to me. So if I'm writing musical theater, I tend to have what I hear in my head, either into Sibelius or on the piano into Logic and import it to Sibelius or handwrite out the melody. Chords, and then I usually work with somebody who's a little more harmonically knowledgeable than I am, just because I didn't study theory as some producers and arrangers have. So that's musical theater. And then when it comes to like folk music, I'll just sing it into folk or pop. I'll sing it into my voice and stuff on the spot. And then just write out a chart with the chords. I don't feel like as much of a need to transcribe it. But the thing is, when I get in this like musical theater, because you study that stuff, like melodically, it gets so complicated. We're like changing modes, sometimes it's just a lot, right? And so it's like I need to make sure that every single interval that I'm clear, so that when I'm sending it to somebody, like they know what it is that I was writing melodically. Because I can't even count on myself to sing things perfectly.
I think that's the value of having a really good orchestrator.
Something I just wrote.
Because sometimes it just makes more sense when you have, I just did a recording session with a string quartet and I recorded everything on Logic and sent it to them. And the orchestrator was like, some of these Logic doesn't read it. They call an E and F flat if it's not in the right, notation. And it's like, I'm not going to catch that when I'm just like composing it and emailing them the notation that Logic kind of dictates, So it's when you have an orchestrator, I've learned in a couple different capacities that having a good orchestrator is like gold, because they'll flesh it all out, put it all in the right places. And even for the players, you know how it should play instead of how it's written. You know what I mean?
You're speaking my language. I know. I mean, it's so true. It's like, since you're trained as a vocalist, I can assume that it's a similar process where it's like you kind of are that partnership with the arranger and the orchestra. Important, and that person needs to really, really be great. So I got it.
And think it also depends on the instruments too. I worked with a horn section and it was a completely different situation of working with them versus the string quartet, only in the sense that, it was more about improvising on the spot for the horns versus arranging it ahead of time. So the players had sheet music for the string quartet. And I love both, kind of capacities for different reasons. Like coming from the classical school, like you do, it's like, the value of sheet music. There's something that is so great about the written notes. And then there's something also that's great about improvisation where you're doing it on the fly. So it's like sometimes being caught in the middle of those two worlds, it can be overwhelming, but I also love seeing all those sides. So it's like,
it's my favorite.
Yes. We gotta work. My favorite thing. This is what this means.
I know. I'm just like, I love writing out everything, and then I also love just looking at like a standard jazz chart and handing it to somebody and be like, let's go to town,
So let me ask you this. So now you finished this musical and you've done original music and made recordings. What's next for you? What do you find the most inspiration from? What's the next thing that you want to get into?
Okay, so I think there's a couple things that are on my mind right now. Like I have a songbook of songs, temporary songs for the modern day diva, and they're basically like a spoof off of jazz standards if they were sung from a female's perspective.
Awesome.
I feel like you made them very fun. Yeah. Because I love vocal jazz, I nerd out on it all the time. And I was just like, what if I wrote these like comedically from a modern day woman's point?
Well, that's what it needs.
I have that book, and I'm performing two of those songs this weekend. Two of those at an online festival this weekend. So it's kind of forming itself. I have in climate change spirituality musical in the works.
Wow.
That came from, I know, it's pretty intense. It came from a song into us. So it was ground for it from the perspective of Mother Earth. And it did, I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, when you sit down and what's going to happen, right? I wrote the song and I was like, oh, wow. I like this song. I'm a musical. So that's cool. And then I have a bunch of stuff I'm writing in quarantine.
Like, you have to stay creative,
like,
right?
Random songs. So I don't know. It'll be like, so I'm definitely going to release a songbook because I think it parallel swiped the most. And also, I want to record the swipe soundtrack. So I'm kind of like, there's a lot going, but I think, you know, we love it so much. It doesn't feel like a lot. It just feels like what we do.
Yeah. And you know what? It's like, it'll all unfold in the right ways at the right time, you know?
That's exactly how it happens, you know? Just keep writing, keep performing virtually now, I guess, you know.
And you are you going to play another song for us? I think you're going to play one more, right?
I'd love to. I have one more that's like the end.
All right.
Okay, so this song is called Birdies, and it's like the, what well in musical like, it happens. It's like a slower, more like sentimental moment before the end of the show. So at this point, my character Polly, she's like kind of sad about all of these online dating situations she went through. So she sings this song to make herself feel better because she loves it.
Aww.
And the birdie in the song, they're a metaphor for the melodies that I hear in my head, because I just hear so much music in my head, and it's like it brings me peace, I guess. So. There's a place that I go when I'm fast asleep. A place that's only for me, and I'm safe and I'm happy. I'm loved and I'm strong. I know they'll visit me. Birdies chirping, tweeting, and they can listen and sing lessons to me. Birdies, when they come, I am happy. Connected to something I see. Those little white doves take their pictures inside of my head. Their songs and their melodies sing something beautiful. I can't believe birdies, little birdies, little chirping birdies. They come happily flapping and lifting. My spirit's so high, I am soaring above treasures inside of my head as I dream that. Their songs and their melodies say beautiful. I can't believe they chose. Got ducks and geese and falcons, doves, cuckoos and chickadees, pelicans, cranes, nightingales and woodpeckers, hummingbirds, kingfishers. long stairs, water fell. We barn owls, kitchen friends, snow goose, Ross and Goose, great white Bronte goose, and the barrow's golden eye. Those little white doves take their pictures inside of my head as I dream magic. Their songs and their melodies sing something beautiful. I can't believe they chose me.
Yeah, very nice. That's like, it's like your Joni Mitchell and Celine Dion sides coming out.
Right, that's what I was saying. They exist in me.
It's in you for sure.
It was so nice. Yeah, it was so nice performing that
mission. Well, you're amazing. Where can people find you for future projects that you're working on and your musicals, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah. So if you go to my Instagram, different projects are on my Instagram, but on all platforms, I'm at Elena Bernardi, AlenaBernardi. And then Swipe is at Swipe Musical. I heard today actually about recording the soundtrack. So I think the thing to plug is that I'm going to release the soundtrack.
Awesome.
In this quarantine, because that is something that
I mean, it gets people like to love the songs and want to come see it performed again. So that's like a smart move. Very smart. Well, we look forward to many more creative endeavors from you, Elena. You're a very talented woman, and we look forward to more things that you're going to put together. Keep us posted. We're going to bring you back on the show, and that'll be in the studio when all of this kind of dies down. And we really appreciate you taking the time for being on Wake Up Hollywood today. You are amazing, and keep doing your thing. We think you're amazing, and thank you again for sharing your music and your soul with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for receiving it. And it was just, I'm really grateful that I got to be on. Thank you.
Likewise. On behalf of Ronan and myself and Eddie Pence, we'll see you guys next week.